Welcome to another episode of the Neil Dammel Show. And this week, I'm really excited to introduce another guest on the show, Alex Bosley. He's a young, up-and-coming, semi-professional cyclist. And it was a really good discussion learning about how he got into cycling. More of a late bloomer, so it gives everybody an inspiration to get into cycling at any age. And also his struggles with his mental health and how he overcame them. And it was really good to understand how someone of such a young age had such maturity and awareness of his mental well-being in order to reach out and gain support. So I feel this is a really good, valuable episode to listen to in terms of understanding the challenges that people face trying to get into cycling, especially semi-professional and professional cycling, and just being aware of your mental health and how you can reach out and get support to manage that, regardless whatever age you are, because I think that's a really valuable topic that we discussed with Alex in today's show. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. And if you want to connect with Alex or reach out to us, everything regarding the show will be in the show notes of the podcast. So enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Neil Dammel Show with your host, myself, Neil Dammel, founder of Dammel Coaching, bringing you simple and honest advice on all things cycling related, helping you to cycle faster and recover quicker. Plus, sharing my personal experiences on all things health, wealth and mindset. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Alex, thank you very much for joining me on today's podcast, today's show. Really, really appreciate you coming on board and just taking your time out of your day as well. But for the listener, just introduce yourself, give us a bit of a backstory of who you are, what's your role within cycling, and you know, leading up to where you are today, really.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you for having me on board. So I am Alex Bosley. I'm a under 23 semi-professional cyclist, and I thought it'd be really nice to talk to Neil about my story and show how far I've come and sort of if I can give any useful insights or information to anyone trying to make a similar journey.
Yeah, good. And how long have you been cycling yourself in terms of, you know, from where you are now to when you started cycling?
I started about 5 or 6 years ago now. Towards the end of youth racing, that under 16 scene. So I was probably quite late relative to a lot of my peers who had been doing it probably 5 years before I started. But I really found my feet quite quickly, and that really did spur me on in terms of progression and being able to have a peer group to catch up to. I think that was one of the big benefits of where I started. I looked at it as a positive and not a negative, because even though they had a lot more experience and probably a lot more fitness, I had that mental determination to sort of chase after them and keep going and just not stop till I get there. So yeah.
Good. Was there any particular like change or anyone inspired you to sort of get into cycling? If you got into cycling later on in life, was there anyone that inspired you to do so? Or were you quite sporty before then and just changed your direction in terms of the sport?
Funnily enough, I'm sort of the first person in my family who started to cycle. So neither my dad nor my mum were cyclists at all. I guess they can sort of ride a bike, but there's a big difference in being able to ride a bike and compete in sort of international races. But I mean, as a kid, I was that typical sporty kid who wasn't really interested in anything academic. I got by in my classes, but sport was where I really wanted to be, and I always wanted to be out either playing football or rugby or something like that. And I picked up athletics from quite a young age, about 7 maybe. And that was what I was doing in my earlier years before cycling. But that and football, sort of, it gave me some small sort of joint niggles and issues, just from a compound of always being on your feet and running about. And then I had a football injury where I fractured my pelvis, and that sort of meant I couldn't play football anymore, and I had to be really careful running. And around that time, I started to pick up a bike, and it just went off from there, really.
Yeah, good. What was the transition like going from, you know, I played football most of my life as well, and then sort of got into triathlon and cycling later on in life. But how have you found that transition from playing like a team sport to, I know cycling is still quite a team sport, but at the same time, it's quite a individual sport alongside it as well, isn't it? So,
yeah. So, I mean, I guess you call cycling a team sport, but it's a weird one because most of the time you're on your own. When I'm training, obviously 90% of my training is on my own, and it is really different because you don't have that same social aspect. While it still can be sociable if you're out on a weekend riding with a group or local club or something, that's really nice. But I think you do have to be very self-driven to be able to continue cycling, especially the time of year we're getting into, when we're getting the shorter days, colder nights. Keeping that motivation up to continue training on your own, just going out for 4 or 5 hours at a time, it brings a different psychological aspect to it, because it's not as easy as, oh yeah, go out and play football tonight with my mates. That in itself is quite attractive, but I don't think a lot of people see the attractiveness in going out in freezing temperatures for 4 hours and just trying to keep warm. So yeah, to me, I was quite lucky because I guess because I love cycling so much, I've never really lacked on that motivation or discipline to get out. And that's probably been one of the main reasons why I've kept going, because I don't actually mind going out on my own all these times, and I can just either put my headphones in or at the same time just listen to the countryside. And the fact that I really enjoy it, I think it's a very important part of cycling. If you don't enjoy all the training you do in the process of getting there, then you're going to really struggle.
Yeah. Was there like a time when you started cycling that you realized that you were pretty good at it? Was there an event or like a training session that you achieved something more than you expected, and you thought, I've maybe got something here I could explore a bit further?
I think my dad would probably know more than me, because to me it was just like, oh yeah, I'll do this race or I'll do this training. And when I first started, I'd go out with a group in Oxford and we'd do like a chain gang. And I always had probably a bit too much determination at times. I'd like do everything I could to stick on that wheel and not get dropped. And sometimes I'd have some bike problems. I remember doing a chain gang and I was locked out of half of my gears. I only had about 4 or 5 gears to use, and I still made it to the end, whereas I think most of the others had dropped out. But I think an accumulation of some probably quite extreme trainings I did and extreme performances and races where, despite a crash, I'd sort of find my way back into the race. And I think my dad really saw the determination I had in those few times, and because he said this to me before, and he knew at that point I had something in the sport to give. And it wasn't just the determination, it was also the fitness I had to keep up with the bigger guys who could in theory easily outpower me. But I just, that dogged determination of not giving up really played into my strengths.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And what was the transition in terms of getting into cycling from, you know, I know from a grassroots level playing football, there's obviously a lot more opportunity for playing sport and different funding, but obviously cycling can be less funded in certain areas. And what was the transition in terms of being able to pay, when was there much expense in order to try and get into the sport at that age and do races as well? Was that a challenge initially to, you know, get to where you are now?
Yeah, it's quite tough because unfortunately it seems to be one of the sports where you need the money. There's no two ways about it. You need to have enough money to fund one or even two bikes, do all the training, all the upkeep of a bike, and all the races are quite expensive, especially here in the UK. You're paying up to £50 just to do a race. Yeah. And I've been really lucky because I've had my parents to support me financially up until sort of the last couple of years. But when I first started at that grassroots level, there was a lot of support. I was in a really good position. And although I'd joined in a bit late, I was still able to get some help from British Cycling. They ran some sort of sessions in various places, which I was able to attend. And that was definitely one of the biggest factors in my progression, because it helped me learn a lot of stuff off the bike for sort of upkeep and not just going hard in races, but also the tactical side of it, and knowing that it's not all just whoever's the fittest will win. It's about how you use your strengths and sort of combat with your weaknesses. So yeah, I was quite fortunate, because at that younger level I believe there is quite a lot of support for your ability to progress. Yeah,
it's good. I think, so if you're seeing that you've got some talent there, then you can explore maybe some support through British Cycling to explore that talent further. I know they do schemes where I've worked with them before, where like a talent scheme leading up to Olympics and stuff like that, and trials to see if people have got some talent to, you know, then pass them through the Olympic scheme leading up to Olympics 5 or 6 years down the line, you know. So
yeah, they really take care of the people they keep as part of a team. They really do take care of them. And I know it's been quite unfortunate recently. They've had quite a lot of, well, they've had a lack of funding really. So they haven't been able to support as many riders as they would have liked, but it seems like they obviously do take care of the people they can, and they do give the best opportunity possible.
Yeah.
And we've seen that with the likes of sort of Ethan Vernon turning pro, along with a lot of others, and we've had great success stories. So yeah.
Was there quite a good opportunity for you to do a lot of races at that grassroots level when you started then, and that was quite easy to access as well?
Yeah. It probably wasn't the easiest, because the races could have been quite far away. Most of them are in London or sort of up north maybe. But luckily there were always races I could be doing. Probably my most common was down in Hillingdon, West London, or maybe odd down in Bath. There's always quite a few circuits you can be doing. And yeah, at that under 16 level, there's so many races. And each race you learn so much from.
Yeah.
And most of the time you're racing against the same guys, which at first I thought, oh, this is a bit boring, where's everyone else? But then you realize, well, you're probably learning more, because if you're racing the same people, you actually get to know them and you get to understand where they're weaker, where they're stronger. So then you can take that into consideration when you're trying to beat them.
Yeah. And were they like closed road events, or are they sort of open road events? Because I know that's always sometimes kind of a grey area, isn't it, regarding safety as well?
Yeah, so at under 16 level, it's always closed road.
Yeah.
Most of it, well, most of the time it's on like a circuit like Hillingdon or Redbridge or something like that. Occasionally you'd have, more towards the summer, a town centre criterium. Yeah. Those were so fun because you get a big crowd out, and yeah, it's always a bit more exciting going through a town rather than on a circuit. But unfortunately, those have seemed to have died off a little bit, mainly because of lack of funding. And it's really hard to run those sort of races, all the planning, permission, all of the logistics. But yeah, so under 16 level is all closed circuit and quite as safe as it can be. When you get to junior level, it does give you the potential to do a bit of road racing, but you've got to take it quite slowly, I guess, and British Cycling really try and help you with that. But then when you get to under 23 level, it's more the opposite. Most of it will be road racing, and
yeah,
you may be able to do a little bit of closed circuit, but if you want to be performing with the top guys, you need to be on the roads.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's that like been, what's that transition been like for you from like junior into under 23, you know, riding with adults and you sort of getting into, you know, the pro team that you are now? What was that transition like for you, and how did that happen?
It wasn't as smooth as it could have been, for sure. As a second year junior, that was 2020, and that was the year the pandemic came. So I did, I think it was two races that year, one of which my bike had a mechanical and the other I crashed out of. So not a very successful year. And I was, yeah, it's fair to say I was really underwhelmed, because I had really high hopes in that second year of junior, and it's arguably the most important year of your progression, because that's when you enter under 23 and get into sort of a development team or a continental team. And I just had nothing, because I had no results to give. I had good power stats, but it wasn't good enough without any backup from results. So I just had to take, like, I just had to hold my thoughts and say, oh yeah, next year will be fine. And that's when I went into a French team that year, and I won one of these stage races in Northern France towards the end of 2021.
Yeah.
And that was a bit of a breakthrough, because before that, I think I'd won one race, and that was as an under 16, because junior I didn't really do anything, because as a first year junior I was focusing on exams.
Yeah.
Second year the pandemic came, and then going into under 23 I had nothing. So to sort of salvage something, because the first year under 23 was really rewarding, and I think I gave me a very important confidence boost, because for maybe 18 months I just had nothing. I didn't get to race so much, I didn't have any results, and you always need something to keep you going, something to refresh your mind that, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing the sport and this is why I love it, because you can only really go so long with being deprived of something. So yeah, then as my in my more recent years as an under 23, I seem to have sort of lacked the mentorship, because while I've got a physical fitness of a mental determination, something's just been lacking, and it's because I've sort of lost my direction a bit. But I think we'll come on to that later.
Yeah. So because when you were doing the races, I mean, you judged when you're with the team based on your results, or are you based on your role within the team, depending on what that role is?
At the level I'm at, so in a French, not professional team, just a French average team, we try to sort of help each other out in results and get, if we know one of us aren't going to win, we'll at least try and use that person to help someone win. And I've really loved that. It's one of the reasons why I love the sport. If you're willing to sacrifice yourself to help someone else get a really good result, then that's one of the best feelings. And yeah, like, well, in 2022, I did quite a lot of that for the team, because I wanted to really show them how sort of how much I appreciated them and how I was willing to do anything for them, like hopefully they would do for me. So I helped a few of my teammates get some wins and races, whether that was leading them out in a sprint or creating a breakaway for them to sort of win from, or anything like that, or just even blocking the road, something quite simple. Tactically, I was doing everything I could for my teammates, and then, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't really get the opportunity to show myself so much, because I was doing a bit too much of that, maybe. But yeah, it does seem, while teams will look at how you perform as part of a team, it does mainly just come down to results, because you need to be able to prove yourself in that way, because it is slightly different to just helping someone win rather than winning yourself.
Yeah. So yeah, I suppose like when it related to football, I only related to football because I've had majority of my life in that sport. You could be a really essential part of that team without getting the glory all the time, being a striker, for example. But again, then you could still be scouted, or another team might like you based on what you provide for the team. But would you, are you saying that basically within, if you're in cycling, while you've got that really strong team member, initially you need to be like a striker to be able to show that you're getting the main results and the glories, to, in order to be noticed more and then build your, you know, your way up through the ranks?
Yeah, so I guess in a football team, there's some similarities. So obviously in a football team, you've always got that position. So if you're a goalie, you're always going to be a goalie. You're never going to be a striker all of a sudden. And as a cyclist, before you get to the World Tour ranks, it's not quite the same. Because, well, when you're in the World Tour ranks, you have got that set position. You'll have your GC leaders, you'll have your sprinters, you'll have your domestiques. And then you'll have some rouleurs. So you've always got those different aspects. But before you get to that, it's a bit of a mix, really. Well, some teams will have that, but most of the time they won't. So that's where I was at. So for me, I was having to sort of combine it also, be a sprinter, be a lead out man, be a domestique, be a breakaway rider, do a bit of everything. And at the level I was at, that was really important, because you're gaining experience in all of that and realizing what works and what doesn't. But you don't want to get stuck as a domestique, for example, when you're at that level, because you need to be able to provide some results for yourself, not just for a team. Because it's like, if you put it into football terms, if you're one of the best, I don't know, like one of the best midfielders, but your team is always losing. You could be the best midfielder in the world, but if your team keep losing, then you're not going to be where you want to be, ultimately.
Yeah.
So you need to, when you're as a cyclist, you need to be getting results for yourself as well as showing that you can get results as part of a team. But ultimately, results for yourself will always come first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very good analogy to look at, because you still have to be very selfish. And I suppose when you look at any other sport, in order to progress, you still have to be very selfish, even if you're in the team. If you're a really good player and there's an opportunity to go somewhere else to improve your ability working, being in a better team, then as much as you're loyal to that team, you're still going to probably take that progression because you're thinking about your own progression and not the team, because it's essentially still down to you, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And whereabouts are you now in terms of your cycling? I saw on your blog that you were out in Australia, was it, for a bit?
Italy. Yeah.
Italy as well.
Yeah, so I spent, this year has been, it's been a funny year, really. So I started off really, really well. But I had a few logistical issues with my French team early season. I was meant to be heading out there to catch all the early season races and classics, but some things hadn't been sorted out, so I couldn't get over there, which is really annoying because I had the best winter I've ever had, and my training leading up to it is spot on. So it's pretty anticlimactic not to be able to race. But then a very unique and golden opportunity with Zappies in Italy came up, and I just took it with both my hands and got out there with like one day's notice. And again, I was so lucky to have the opportunity. But I think with hindsight, maybe I just wasn't ready for it. I'd never been out to Italy before. I didn't have any clue what the racing would be like. And I was being thrown into UCI races straight away. And sort of the silver lining at the end was that I knew how I was so capable of staying those races, because I was actually doing quite well in the races up until I had a few mechanical problems, unfortunately. But during the race, I'd be sort of cruising effectively. And it felt so good to be at that level and to not struggle, to actually realise that it's somewhere I'm capable of being. And when I'm given the opportunity, it's fine. Like, I'm cruising in a race, a UCI race, with all these sort of pro Conti teams and development teams. And yeah, that was probably the highlight of the year, weirdly. Just being so comfortable in a race like that, and sort of being able to move around the peloton quite easily, that was really important for my mentality. But yeah, it was just unfortunate, the mechanical issues I had while I was out in Italy. And I really can't fault Zappies, because they gave me such a unique opportunity. And I was more or less just quite lucky to be able to get that experience of racing out there.
Yeah.
To be able to know what it's like to have a team bike, and because I've never had a team bike before. That was really cool. And they're just such a great setup there. They have got sort of, well, I think it's one of the best opportunities for cyclists to progress and to experience that top level. So yeah, I felt a bit empty-handed coming away from that. But mentally, I was so refreshed, because having raced at that level and being comfortable there really gave me that confidence and just what I needed. Because while I didn't walk away with any trophies or podiums or flowers or whatever, that to me, that didn't matter so much because at least I knew I'm capable of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, then I came back and I just struggled to get out training a bit. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm just tired from quite an intense few weeks in Italy. And I decided to take a week off quite early. But then coming back after a week off, things just got worse and worse. And I was really struggling to get out of the door training. I thought something's really not right here. I was just, it was weird because I had such a high from coming back from Italy. And then I went to arguably one of the lowest points where I've never had it where I'm struggling to get out training. And I thought, if I'm really so unmotivated to get out training, then maybe I should just not do it. So then I had a bit of a wobble. It was a very big wobble where I was thinking, do I continue? Do I try and keep cycling or do I just sort of stop? Because if you lose all of that discipline and motivation to keep going, then it's so hard to get started again. You need something to sort of reignite your passion. So I decided I'd take time off. I'd think about what I'm going to do and I'd see where I go from there. Because at that point, I seriously had to consider just throwing in the towel and giving it up. And this was sort of July, August time at this point. And oh, I was looking back, I was thinking, what a waste, like all these years and it just comes to nothing. But then I had a bit of a breakthrough because I was lucky enough to sort of talk to my dad about it. And I'm quite blessed to be that close with him. Because it's not often you can talk like that to someone so close like your dad. And after talking to him, it made me realize how, in a way, it's just a rough patch. And I've been sort of so deprived of good news in cycling. It's always felt so negative, and it's always felt like an uphill battle. But I just needed that sort of mental reset to get going again. So I had all of August off, more or less. I went out a little bit, but it was just free ride. And then September, before September even, I was thinking, like, screw this. I can't be off the bike any longer. Like, I need it. Because I've never felt, before then, I'd never felt what it's really like to stop training. And at first, it was a bit of a relief almost, weirdly. I haven't got to get up and think about where I'm going to train or how long I'm going to go out for. And I'll admit, I sort of liked it at first. It was quite nice to have that sort of lack of routine a bit, where I wouldn't have to get up, have breakfast and get out the door. I could just sort of relax and have a little sort of late start to the day. But then after a while, I couldn't stand it anymore. I was like, I need to get out on the bike. Like, there's no other way around it. And I tried sort of doing a few runs, but I was like, that's not cutting it. Like, I need to be back on the bike. Because there's nothing like that. And those first few rides of me being back on the bike in September was such a, almost like a new feeling. Like, I'd never felt that good to be out. And even though I'd probably lost all my fitness at this point, because I'd taken a month off. And before that month off, I was sort of trying to cut my training. I've never felt so good mentally to be on a bike, and that sort of freedom of just going right up and down the hills and through the countryside. It sort of it gave me a lot of flashbacks to when I first started, when I was 15, 16, and that feeling of just going out and having all that freedom. And mentally, it just really unlocked a new side. So yeah, it was quite this. That's why I say it's been a funny year this year, because going into it, I was probably the most hopeful I've ever been. But then halfway into it, I had a sort of crisis point where I was like, am I just giving up now, or am I going to fight through it? And now I'm at the point where I've got new people around me who have sort of given me that breath of fresh air and that new invigoration that I really need. And it's really making me look hopeful towards next year, because maybe 6 weeks ago, if you asked me what my plans are, I would say I haven't got a clue. Like, whatever you say, my plans maybe. But now, having had that reset mentally and also physically, probably, it's given me such a new feeling and something I'm really excited to take into winter and next year.
Yeah, it's great. Hey there, fantastic listeners of the Neil Damel Show. We hope you've been enjoying our episodes as much as we have been enjoying making them. We have a quick little request for you. If you could take a moment to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean the world to us. Your reviews help us reach more people and continue to grow. Plus, if you have a friend who you think would love the show, please consider sharing it with them. We're all about building a wonderful community of listeners, and your support makes it happen. Thanks a million. Now back to the show. What would you say the biggest stress can be then within the job of cycling? Because obviously you've got the financial side of things in terms of being with a team. How much do you get paid there? Is there not being with a team and then the financial issues there? Or obviously then just the structure of your training, what would you say kind of gives you the biggest or provides maybe the biggest stress alongside of the now? So if you combine it all together, can you pinpoint any particular factors?
I mean, yeah, financial stress has always been there for me, because in my early years, I was lucky enough to have that support from my parents, but they're always going above and beyond. They never really could afford it, but they'd always find a way. So we were always sort of scavenging for secondhand parts and just trying to sort of cut corners, which, looking back, it sort of delayed my progression a little bit, probably, because when you buy a secondhand kit, you never know if it's going to sort of blow up in your face or something. And a few times it has, so I sort of learned the lesson the hard way. But yeah, that's always been there. But I feel, unfortunately, it's all too common in cycling. You're having to stretch yourself so thin just to keep your bike running and to keep going to races. And yeah, it's hard to sort of get over that. But luckily now I'm starting to get that real financial stability where I can afford everything and I'm not having to stress too much about it, which is really important. But alongside finances, the first one that comes to mind is the instability of cycling, because I could go out training and have a crash tomorrow and that could be the end of my career. Ultimately, there's no security in cycling until you get to the level where you're being paid a full wage. But even then, you can have a crash. But
yeah,
just always having to worry about what team I'm going to go to, especially around this time of year, when everyone's sort of changing teams and going up and down and everything. There's always that, even during the season as well, just at the back of your head, you're like, oh, what team am I going to be getting into next year? And how is that team going to be the best for me? And is there any way of getting into a better team? I've always struggled with that because I had really big prospects as a junior. I sort of dabbled my feet into development teams or pro conti, but I never quite made the cut. And I feel like I've always had a chip on my shoulder from that. I've always been trying to get my way back in there. But at the end of the day, sometimes it's not meant to be. And you've got to be realistic with yourself and be saying, oh yeah, I'm like, you can't just say, oh yeah, I'm going to sign with Ineos on a 500k salary in the next 6 months, because that's never going to happen.
Yeah,
you can sort of take steps to progress.
Yeah,
I think maybe in the last few years I've been a bit naive and been thinking, oh yeah, if I've got the power numbers to get in this team, then why don't they just take me? But there's so many more aspects to just your power. First of all, it's results and it's you as a person.
Yeah.
So yeah, but the team struggles have always been there, and that instability in teams, because we've seen a lot of UK teams sort of folding, especially this year and last year.
Mm.
So yeah, but that's probably another really big one.
Is it like a yearly contract that you generally just get year to year, or sometimes they give you like more than a year? Because obviously just a yearly contract in any job would be quite unstable, you know, unstabilizing in terms of your mental health, in terms of where you can, you know, build a platform and get settled in terms of financial stability, but also work stability, I suppose, in that sense.
Yeah, so obviously the ideal is to get a longer contract, like 2 years, 3 years, but especially at an under 23 level, when you're always sort of changing around, 1 year is most common. If you're lucky, you might get a 2 year contract, but because you're still progressing quite a lot as an under 23 rider, in a year, a lot can change. So it is quite rare to be given more than a year's contract, but that's just the way it goes, I guess. Whereas when you get a couple of years older, that's when you start to settle down in a team and really find your feet.
Yeah, that's good. And you mentioned when you came back, like from Italy, and you had such a really good hire at the start of the year, and then sort of coming back and trying to, you know, work through that. Did you find the mental well-being side of things, obviously, because obviously you've been cycling for a long time and you've had quite maybe a rigid training plan, like all those years, to not have any plan?
Mm.
Did you find that quite challenging at times as well? And then obviously you mentioned that you got back to just enjoying cycling. Was that like the biggest, like aha moment that you find you had to like focus on? Because obviously it can be probably quite intense with, you know, consistent training. And I would say from an outside perspective, you could easily lose the, you know, for me as an amateur and amateurs that I work with, lose the reason why you cycle in the first place, because you enjoy it. And, you know, training obviously helps you enjoy cycling more. But if it's just all about training, you forget about enjoying the sport and being out, like you mentioned. Was that something that you've had to sort of contend with as well?
Yeah, I think it was only when I had a chance to reflect, I realized the last few years, my discipline maybe has gone a bit too far. Like, it almost goes to the extreme where I'll be so disciplined, I'm not always treating it as enjoyment, which is really, it's really sad, because obviously it's something that I do enjoy, but you should never feel like you have to do it. And I think that's where it started to go a bit too far, when I just sort of force it too much. And obviously that's going to ping back at you at some point. And I think it just built up over such a long period of time that it really hit me in the face later on, and I completely sort of shut down from that. But yeah, it is really important to be able to take a look, step back and take a look at if you are really enjoying it, or if it's just sort of you being so disciplined and making yourself do it, because there's a really big difference in that. Because if you are forcing it too much, it's always going to hit you back in the face, whether it's 6 months or 3 years down the line. And while I've always loved the discipline I have, I've got to sometimes think, is it a good or bad discipline? Because although I'm doing good for myself, cycling, keeping fit, if it's not good for my mentality, then you need to sort of make sure it is. So if that means taking a day off or doing something a bit different, going for a run instead or swimming or something. Yeah, because I'd never really experienced anything like that, because before then I'd completely loved my training and I'd been like, oh yeah, this is what I want to be doing. But then when I started to have that negativity, there was no way of getting out of it. And I soon realized that it was, well, with hindsight, it was the best thing that's happened to me, because since then I've never felt so motivated to get out training. And recently I've just been getting up earlier and getting out training earlier and just enjoying it. Like, it's not like I don't need to use headphones to train. Like, I can just appreciate being outdoors. Whereas before I was like, oh yeah, I need to listen to these songs to keep me like motivated, and I need to listen to this podcast to keep me motivated. And but at the time I never thought it was a bad thing. I thought it was just helping me push through. But obviously it's not great when you're having to sort of cheat yourself into doing it. So yeah.
You feel that's in sense, you know, when people use headphones. I've grown up running without headphones and cycling without headphones, so I've used it from time to time, but I generally love being out with my own thoughts, and generally my brain switches off without any music anyway. Might use it headphones in the gym, which is different. But do you think, you know, because I see a lot of guys now and females cycling around with headphones on, maybe commuting or just training, and I think you're just removing yourself a little bit from the environment, which is not always a good thing in terms of safety. But do you also found that that could be quite like a almost like taking a supplement to enhance your training, you know, even when you're, say, a lot of people take like an energy supplement, pre-workout drink before they get to the gym because they're tired, but actually they're not listening to their body because they're tired. They should probably maybe rest and not change their workout or not work out at all, but they're kind of trying to override that in order to try and fulfill maybe a training plan. Was that, do you feel that's maybe the same essence within listening to music or other aspects?
I think there's two reasons why I use headphones. It's either to distract you from the pain or to actually enjoy the music you're listening to. And I think it's only bad if you're using it to get through the day, because if you can't appreciate what you're doing, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. And if you need to use the headphones as, like you say, like an energy supplement, then it's not a great sign. I mean, obviously in the gym it's different, and sometimes in cycling it is genuinely helpful. I find if you're doing an interval session, it helps you to have that high intensity music. But yeah, I think for me, most of the time it's fine using headphones. But if you're using headphones because you're sick of being outdoors and you don't like the countryside, then maybe that's something that's not too good. So yeah, because in my case, to be fair, in the first couple of years, I don't think I ever used headphones. And then when I did, I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, I can do two things at once, like listen to music and cycle. Like, it's combining my favorite things.
Yeah.
But then probably the sort of enthusiasm for cycling went down and the need for music went up. And that's obviously what you don't want to happen. If you're like, oh, I can't listen to music, so it's going to be a rubbish ride. That's not a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, if you need the music to give you a little energy boost or like to motivate you a little bit, then that's fine. Like, there's no problem with it. Obviously, there has been a bit of controversy as to whether it's safe to listen to music and what headphones you need, but as long as you are being safe with it, there shouldn't be any reason to stop you.
Yeah, no, that's good. And you're just going back to what you mentioned about your mental well-being, Alex. Was it you sort of realizing that you needed to take a break, or did you have anybody aside from your family around you within the cycling network with your team that you could open up to or speak to, or was there to maybe guide you or look after you in that way? Do you feel that support is available at the moment, or is that something that needs to be improved on upon?
Yeah, so truthfully, I don't think there's enough mental support for athletes in not just cycling, but for all sports. And yeah, because to me, I think if I didn't have my parents to turn to, then it would have been a very dark and dangerous time for me, because being able to talk to someone is so underrated. Like, no one, until you're in that position where you're so desperate to get something out, and if you can't get it out, then it's just going to bottle up inside you and then it'll be a lot worse. But to be able to actually speak about the hard times you're going through, as well as the good times, it's always nice to speak about when you're doing so well. But the importance is so profound of speaking up when it's not going well. And it's a lot harder because sometimes you don't want to admit it. You just want to sort of hide it and be like, oh, in a couple of weeks it'll be much better, so I can just look forward to that. But it is so important to get it all out and to not be bottling up anything, because it can get overwhelming. And if you put everything into a sport and it doesn't give you the return that you need or want, it can be so disheartening and it can really affect your mentality. And it is something, it's not just in cycling. I believe it's in all sports. But yeah, I am incredibly lucky to have my parents and for them to support me and be there for me. Because I think if I didn't have that a few months ago, then I almost definitely wouldn't be cycling, and I wouldn't have that mental clarity now. But yeah, just having a sort of support circle like that is so profoundly important. But it's hard to sort of realize it and understand it sometimes, because you think, oh yeah, I'll just bottle it up, like no one needs to know if I'm struggling because I'll get over it myself. And most of the time it's true, like you can and you will get over stuff yourself. It's just a little rough patch, but there's really no downside to speaking out about it. And it's great to see there are some people being more vocal on that side.
But
for me, having my parents was a bit of a lifeline, I think.
Yeah, that's so really important, especially for someone at your age as well, who is really aware of that now, because I know certainly at that age I wasn't, and I bottled it up a lot up until I got into my 30s really, and then I really sort of opened up and I had to seek some help to do so. But it definitely changes your life in a positive way, that you can be open, and the fact that you can even talk to me and we've only just really met, is just shows that you're really comfortable to be able to not just help yourself, but you're helping others by talking about it as well, which is commendable. You know, really, really good at it. So yeah, excellent. Did you feel that, or just looking at your blog as well, that certain aspects of that mental health was around nutrition as well? Because you said, just a little quote that you wrote on your latest blog in August, is that there's always issues with my diet. There's no secret in cycling. A lot of people struggle with their diet and controlling intake of food, etc. What aspect of that particularly are you relating to? And obviously there is a big pressure sometimes in cycling in terms of weight management and getting to a certain weight. How would you sum that up in terms of how you've managed that and what lessons have you learned alongside?
It is no secret that cycling is so weight dependent a lot of the time. And if you can get lighter, then you'll most likely do everything you can to be lighter. And it can be quite hard to keep a healthy balance between it, because the last thing you want to be doing is undernourishing yourself and just not eating enough. If anything, you just need to be eating the right amount of food, whatever that may be. But yeah, I've always been quite intrigued by sort of food and diets and everything. And I've tried quite a few different things myself. But yeah, I think it's probably about a year ago now when I realized how flawed my diet was and how I really wasn't getting the right quantities of nutrition and nutrients in. But I thought it was fine because I could get away with it because I'm a cyclist. But that's really not the way you want to look at it. You want to be doing everything you can for your body and giving it the perfect nutrition. A lot of the time I'd like go out to the shops, I just wolf down a bag of sweets because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm doing training tomorrow, so it'll be fine. But no one in their right mind would wolf down a bag of sweets and be like, oh yeah, it's fine. Like, it's not a great thing to do. And while it may technically be fine, it's not giving your body the right stuff. And the last few years, I found I've been having so much sugar, like just way too much. I've been in the pre-diabetic range. So I sort of realized if I keep going like this, then sort of I'm going to really screw up my insulin and diabetes may sort of crop up at some point. So then sort of alarm bells were ringing off because I was like, I've got to reverse this somehow. So then I sort of went completely the other way and I went cold turkey. So I said, no carbs and no sugar. And that's basically a ketogenic diet. So I tried that out, and for the first couple of weeks, I was just like a walking zombie. Except for walking was a bit too tiring. So I was just like a couch zombie. I ended up stopping training for about 2 weeks and just trying to adapt to the diet, because I knew while it was so hard to not have any carbs and not have any sugar, because that eliminates, at that time, it eliminated like 90% of what I was eating. So then I had to find new foods and to sort of get used to being different. But after the 2 weeks, I eventually started picking training up again and getting really into it. And the fact that I didn't have to rely on sugar and carbs to get me out the door for training was really good, because I was like, I feel so much better. I feel healthier. And I was eating a lot healthier, a lot more fruit and veg, a lot less processed food. And it's no secret that that's probably the way to go.
Yeah.
And I probably felt the best, like the best version of myself when I was really thriving on that diet, because I was eating so much like so many natural foods, and sort of staying away from all the sweets and all the chocolates and everything. And what I didn't realize before was that sweets and chocolate was sort of giving me the energy spike to actually get out the door and to do all that training, and to now not have that reliance is really good. I know how much you love porridge, and I had porridge. Well, I had 3 bowls of porridge just to get me out the door some
Right.
mornings. And I'd cake it in like 100 to 200 grams of sugar for each bowl.
Yeah.
And it was only when my dad caught me out doing that, he's like, "Do you really have 3 bowls of all that sugar on each bar?" It's like, "Isn't that normal?" And he was like, "No, that's not normal, Alex." So when I realized that that probably wasn't the way to go, that's when I started looking at alternative diets. And although the ketogenic diet is very, very extreme, it seems, well, it does eliminate most of the foods you eat, and it can really swing your energy in the initial phases. After a few months of doing that, I'd never felt so good in what I was eating. And I've sort of kept that diet in mind. I've sort of introduced carbs and that sort of stuff back into my life now that I'm keto adapted. But it's been part of the journey and sort of really refreshing my mental clarity and giving myself the sort of breath of fresh air that I've needed. Because I can, a lot of the time now, I'm just getting out the door training without needing a breakfast, and I can sort of run on much less, which initially, if I tried doing that, then I'll just be starving my body and sort of forcing a negative adaptation. But it's such a nice feeling of getting out training early morning and not like being so hungry, not being like, "Oh, when can I eat?" So yeah, that's been part of my journey that I've always seemed to struggle with. And truthfully, I think it's very rare to be satisfied with how you're eating and your diet and things. But if you can, as long as you're happy with what you're eating and it's doing good for you, then I don't think you can really lose.
Does that manage, have you managed your weight pretty well, and how's that like change in diet impacted your performance, like when you're training on the bike and stuff?
Yeah, so around this time of year, I'm not being too concerned with weight. I check it from time to time, but obviously, when I start racing, I'll be looking at that on a daily basis. But yeah, I put on. Oh, actually, when I started sort of changing around my foods, I lost 5 kilos within the space of a week, which was a bit. At first, it's quite alarming because I was like, "I'm losing nearly 1 kilo a day." And I was like, "Well, it's great, but is this muscle that I'm losing, or is it fat, or what is it?" But generally, I just sort of keep checking my weight every now and then to check that it's okay. But most of the time, you can sort of feel it on yourself if you feel a bit, I don't know, if you feel. Most of the time, if your mind feels like you've put on a bit of weight, then you might have. Same time, if you feel really good and invigorated, then you may have lost a bit of weight. But yeah, just having that mental confidence, and you're not always looking at your body and you're like, "Oh, I need to lose 5 kilos. I need to get this sort of spare tire off my chest or something." It's nice not to have an sort of, yeah, have a, or what would you say? It's nice to have that refreshing side. You're not constantly worried about your weight.
No, it's important, especially within the sport, you know, any sport where there's a lot of pressure sometimes to make sure you're a certain weight. You need to have that balance and enjoy food for what it is as well, and still being able to manage that when you have to going forward.
Yeah.
And what's your like winter training plan looking like then, leading up into the next few months, going into New Year? How does that work out for you as a sort of pro cyclist compared to maybe someone else? You got any sort of tips as well that you would advise people leading into the winter months going forward?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, the winter's where I make most of my training happen, get in place to be as fit as I can be. And I've recently changed coach to Michael Tarling, who's obviously the father of two very successful young riders. And he's also being a bit of a mentor for me, which is very, well, that's what I've needed and lacked for the last few years. So he's really helping me in getting my winter planned out. So yeah, I've got some, because I'm lucky enough to have all the time I need for training. So I can go out and do 5 hours at any point. But yeah, for now, it's just building up my fitness again, because I've had 4 weeks of getting back into it and just adjusting. But yeah, now I've got October through till February, March, until I'm racing again, to really put my foot down and start ramping up the training. So for me, it's mainly endurance with a few intervals. And I'm still getting used to training myself, because I've been with a previous coach for the last few years, and obviously every coach is different. And
yeah,
I'm really finding it's quite pleasurable to sort of look at my training plan in the morning and be like, oh, this is going to be fun, and have it like that, rather than looking, be like, oh, have I really got to do this? Oh, I don't want to do that. Can I do something else? So yeah, for me, it's a lot of long rides and throwing in some intervals, but having a good mix. And I'm also looking at hopefully getting into velodrome racing, because that was sort of part of how I started when I was 5 or 6 years ago. I did that as well, and I believe that really helped me through winter, because it gives you that social aspect again. It means you're going out and seeing people at a velodrome, and you've got that competition, because you're racing as well as all those skills you learn, because on a fixie bike it's totally different. But yeah, so for me, it's hopefully throwing in a bit of track to keep it quite different. But yeah, long rides, a few intervals. But yeah, I found if I'm ever pressed for time, or if I've got a week where I can't really train, throwing in some intervals is really, it really helps, because if you press the time, if you want to go out for 4 hours, but you've only got 2 hours or an hour and a half, I find doing some high intensity intervals can sort of give more or less the same effect of doing a 4 hour ride. Because it also depends what you want to get out of it. If you want to get the endorphins, then high intensity is great, because it gives you all that. But if you want to really build your fitness, then at the same time, you can sort of find ways around it. If you're under time pressure, or if you're starting from scratch and you're trying to really work your way up, and just taking it easy, not trying to rush in too much and be like, oh yeah, I'll buy a 5 gram bike and then I'll go out for 25 hours a week and it'll be great, because you're gonna hurt yourself. It's gonna be too hard. But yeah, having a good balance, where if you've got a time pressure, just making sure it's still fun, making sure it's something that you're so excited to do, rather than just trying to force yourself out on a 4 hour slog in the rain and wet and
yeah. Do you do much indoor training on Swift, or do you do much weight training in the winter as well, like strength training? that?
Oh, I hate Swift. But no, honestly, Swift is, I can't say a bad word about it. It's a great alternative. Because, at some points in winter, if it's icy outside, there's no chance of getting out. But to me, I just love being outdoors. So it's quite painful to be like sat indoors on a computer looking at my little avatar go really slowly. But to be honest, it saves me from having to take a day off training. So I really do appreciate it, even if I hate seeing that screen. It's giving me PTSD a bit. But yeah, it's a really great tool, especially if you can't get out at a reasonable time. If you've got to get out really early or really late, then most of the time it's probably a better way of doing it because it keeps you safe, keeps you dry. I mean, you may sweat a bit, but you know, that's fine. But yeah, it is really useful for when you need it. And quite a few people, well, at least some people probably prefer it to going outdoors because you don't want to be paranoid about a car running into you or falling off on a descent or something like that. And it's still really fun on Zwift because it's almost more sociable as well because you can do group rides on there and you can do races, and they've really made it into something great. So yeah, Zwift is good for when you need it. But yeah, what else do I do off a bike? I mean, gym work.
Does that play quite a pivotal role during the winter months? About the week.
It's quite important to keep the rest of your body quite good because you can get so tight cycling, like your legs can just really seize up at some points. And especially your back, I've been quite wary of my back and I don't want to sort of be arching over all the time. So just doing the simple stuff like that, just stretching out all your muscles. And then not to mention all the sort of strength work. I know there's a lot of debates about whether strength work is necessary for cycling. I think it can really benefit you. Yeah. But it depends your level and how serious you are. If you've only got 8 hours a week to do training, then the 8 hours should probably be spent on the bike, or maybe 1 or 2 hours a week just stretching. But putting at least a small amount of time into it will help if you do it consistently.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's something that's quite easy to miss out on, but at the same time, really important to do.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a valid point because obviously if you've got more time and you're doing it as your job, then most amateurs and people like myself that are working have to fit in around family life, other commitments. We can't allow our, 40 hours of working week training. We have to prioritize certain areas, isn't it? So what would your advice be if you were someone just working and looking to improve their fitness during the winter months? What would your advice be in terms of where they should focus more on?
I think if you're working 9 to 5, it can be really hard to get out, especially with the short days we've got at the moment. If you can if you feel like getting out for a couple of hours on the bike, and that's great. But at the same time, I get that it's not appealing at all to go out when it's wet and cold and at the end of a working day as well. That's sort of the last thing you want to be doing sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the gym can really come in handy, or Zwift, because I think Zwift is a lot more appealing sometimes, because if you look at the weather at times, you're like, oh, that means I've got to bring like 3 jackets and like 2 pairs of socks. And it's not what you like. It's not that motivating when you've got like that. Whereas if you think, oh yeah, I could do a race on Zwift, that's a really good way of building your fitness up. And I've done that a few times, probably last year or the year before, where instead of doing like a 4-hour training ride, I look at a weather and I'm like, I don't want to be in the rain for 4 hours. So
yeah.
I'll just go on Zwift for 2 hours, sort of do a race in the middle of that, and you feel a lot better and happier. But yeah, and I think that's really, that can be a better way of doing it, because it depends how determined you are to get out on the bike. If you really hate Zwift that much, then yeah, you can go out in the rain and you can enjoy that. But if you just enjoy sort of spinning your legs and cycling, then doing it indoors really helps. And also, if you can dedicate a little bit of time to a gym, I think that really will help, because it's very different. It's not exactly related to cycling, but just stretching out your body, making sure you're not seizing up.
Yeah.
Can be really, at any age as well, like whether you're sort of 15 or 20 or 40, it doesn't matter, because your muscles are still always in need of stretching out, and you need to look after them, and they'll look after you eventually.
Yeah. Very good point, because especially training during the winter months, you just want to be safe as well, isn't it? There's no point going out. I train a lot more in the winter now than I've ever done, and just having that knowledge and confidence that you can just have a good session without, you know, like you said, I live in London, so I've got to deal with a lot of traffic and cars and just the weather itself and the road surfaces. So especially when you want to be out enjoying it in the summer months, that winter months on the Zwift is definitely the way to go if you want to.
Yeah.
Safe way as well, you know.
It's good. It's more just having the option, really.
Yeah.
Not feeling like you have to be outside. Because for a lot of people, that's not always appealing. I get in summer, obviously, it's a lot more appealing, but coming into winter, it's always that nice.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point, Alex. Have you got, I'm just going to, a couple more questions for you, but I really want to appreciate your time, and you've been fantastic to talk to today. What's your sort of, you know, what are you looking forward to over the next year then, over the winter and leading into 2024? What's, you know, on the horizon for you and what you're excited about?
So yeah, well, I'm keeping a few bits secret. Can't say everything, but yeah, next year is looking really, really good. You can say that about every year, but I do have belief that the next 8 to 12 months are going to be really quite pivotal, just mainly in cycling, but also for myself. I'm really quite excited to see what happens with a new coach and a new team. There's a lot of pieces moving about, but I'm just glad that now I've got the training in and I can see where my progression should take me. It's really exciting to see where that could end up.
Yeah, good. I'm excited to, you know, monitor your progress as well and catch up and see how you're doing results wise next year. And where can, if other people want to sort of connect with you and maybe reach out to you and say hi on social media, whatever, any particular links or social media platforms you could direct them to if they want to follow
your
journey as well?
So my main use is on Instagram. So I'm Alex Bosley with an underscore at the end. Everyone struggles with spelling my surname, but you should find me somewhere. So that's what I mainly use. I'm on Facebook as well as Alex Bosley. And I've got Twitter, but I'm still quite unfamiliar with that. So
that's all right. Yeah, good. No, brilliant, Alex. I mean, you know, thank you very much for coming on the show. And I've had a, you know, fun time, a great time having a chat with you. And I think you've really provided the listeners with a lot of good inside knowledge of the world of cycling, also training, and you know, a lot of takeaways that people can apply to their own cycling journey, whatever that might be as well. So, all right, so thank you very much. Have you got any other lasting thoughts you'd like to share about your journey, or any other exciting things in the pipeline for you? I'd like to.
No, not really. I mean, well, watch this space, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what everyone says, but
No, definitely. I think that's the key, isn't it? I'm really pleased that you've had that journey where you've had some challenges mentally but overcome them, and that's only going to make you a stronger cyclist but also an individual as well. And sharing it with, you know, my listeners today is going to help other people understand the importance of talking about it, but also how you can overcome it as well, and make sure that just speaking about it helps massively regardless whatever situation you might be struggling with as well. So
yeah. I think it's important to enjoy the journey and not to worry too much about where you end up, as long as you're enjoying where you are. I think that is really important.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Alex. Well, Alex, I mean, thank you very much again, man, for coming on. Thank you very much. We've had a good, you know, hour and a half chat, so I've really, really enjoyed it. I probably could talk to you a lot longer as well. Definitely probably had a few more questions maybe, but I think the way the chat's evolved, it's been fantastic, really, you know, really easy to talk to. So thank you very much for your time and coming on board today. So really, really, really thank you for that. So yeah. If you also